The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Tell me what's going on.
I never thought I'd be calling you.
I hope you're going to agree with me.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
I'm not into predictions, but you want me to make a prediction?
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I really didn't want to call you about this.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yay.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
You seem like an honest guy.
A lot of people suffer when they have to listen to me. So at least you're getting your daily dose of suffering right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Yeah, I broke a talk radio rule. Hard to believe, huh? Had a young man named Roman last week. 20-year-old young man. Seemed to really want to believe. But he was struggling. Struggling with a lot of doubts assaulting him. And he reverberated with me, because I went through a lot of that. So I not only kept him over one break, I kept him over two. I think the whole call probably encapsulated 12 to 15 minutes. Well, I decided I've got to shorten him up. Really got to shorten him up. I mean, some people don't get on because I get into a point counterpoint or question and answer. So the way I've decided to do this, today's show, if you have a question, it's going to be true false. That's it. You call in, I'll go true, false, next question. Now, I have a 50-50 chance of getting those. I could close my eyes and get 50% of those. On the other hand, when I do short answer essays, which is what typically we do here, I have the same trouble that I had when I was in college. Give me multiple choice. Give me true, false. Give me fill in the blank. The short answer essay stuff is tough. However, if I can't put your question in a true, false form, I will endeavor to short answer essay it. I'm a psychologist. What kind? Clinical. That's what I do for a living. That's my profession. In the office or consulting, however the professional direction takes me. Now, here on the radio, I don't diagnose and I don't do therapy. And I certainly am not going to comment on anything that another therapist has said. Or even if you're seeing another therapist, that pretty much limits any thought I could give you. But if you call in here at 877-573-7825... with a question about something in your life, person, place, thing, rock, paper, scissors, or if you have a helpful comment for another caller. Now, we get a lot of those, and those are good. You know, I want you to know I'm writing them all down, and I'm going to put them in a book, and I'm going to make a lot of money, and I thank you. Or if you have a comment that we just think could be helpful for people to live their lives better, the intersection of emotional health and spiritual health, 877-573-7825. 877-57 equal is the number to call to get onto the program. I would love to hear from you. The definition, the clinical definition of a phobia is an irrational fear beyond the actual realistic risk. And furthermore, it is a fear which dramatically constricts one's life. Let's say that a 6-year-old had just a bad experience with a dog. Now that 6-year-old is 24. Since then, the bad experience has never happened again. Never again. In all contexts, wherever, however, but the person just doesn't want to be around dogs, no matter what. I mean, it could be a little chihuahua, you know, a little yapper, 7.5-pound yapper. So that fear lingers, and it lingers against all evidence since that 6-year-old experience. Or let's say that someone is afraid of flying. Terrified of flying. I've had clients like this. They've come to me because they want to be over their fear of flying. Now, if you look at the odds of flying in the U.S., even when we were really flying a lot, I mean, we were flying about half of what we were, but when we were flying a lot, I mean, your odds of going down on a plane are millions to one. Millions to one. You, if you're afraid of odds like that, don't get in a car. Don't get in your bathtub. A lot of people fall, slip in bathtubs. So, given that, what is it? Well, the person has in their head, not in reality, in their head, that flying is extremely scary and risky. I had a friend who was raised by a mother who was terrified of traveling 5-8 miles from home. That's it. She would not. She had terrific anxiety at doing anything like this. Now, you probably know people like this. The old word for it was agoraphobia, which is just a Greek term, means fear of the marketplace. Agora. He grew up, and he grew up well into adulthood with a fear of traveling. The thing about fears, they are either established by some kind of experience or by the head. Incoming information that a person hears and digests it and decides that there is a significant, serious risk to them, to others, whether there is or whether there isn't. Now, once the evidence is in that that risk no longer exists, at some point that the original impetus for the fear is gone or reduced 95%. People will still, if not outright afraid, will be skittish. They will be nervous. Things that didn't bother them at all before will bother them, will make them have to force themselves to do things. I know what some of you are thinking. You're thinking, well, I know what he's alluding to. I'm going to underline this again because it's amazing what people hear. If you offer any other thought to flesh out what's going on in the last year in our country, people immediately assume you're saying that this virus is not threatening, it's not serious, it's not something we have to take precautions about. I've never said that, ever. Not once. Not once. But boy, some of the emails I get there, they're telling me, yeah, you did. No, I didn't. I'm saying that there are certain ramifications of what we've been going through that are going to linger. There's no doubt in my mind. Fear of crowds. Fear of touching. People used to routinely just hug. Yeah, you think they'll want to hug that much anymore? Even after this has disappeared from the front pages? You think? I don't. Church. There'd be a lot of reasons people are not going to return to church, even after it's all gone and passed in terms of the threat. There'll be a lot of reasons. One of them, I got to believe, will be, I'm just nervous about it. It's out there, you know. It never goes away. There's that idea. Prior to the high profile, relentless hammering away at we're all in serious trouble, which is, by the way, not true. And it's least true with school age children. However, prior to that, people just pretty much living life. And you know the irony? If we really want to be concerned about our health, don't allow yourself to get extremely overweight. Don't be sedentary. All kinds of research is out there that number one threats to health is excessive weight and sedentary. Those are huge. They're going to take down many more people. But yet we won't look at that risk. That's not a risk that has been planted in us. So just like the dog, just like flying, just like traveling, when there is much less reason to be nervous, to be scared, to retreat, when that reason backs off, it won't have a correlation of one. And Wilson from Fort Clinton, when I talk to him, he knows what that is. It won't have a correlation of one in terms of anxiety going away. The risk will drop long before the anxiety reverberates, echoes, before it goes away. That's just, I think, the reality. 877-573-7825, 877-577 equal. I have a licensed therapist, which is kind of cool. So I will say this where I talk to Wilson. if you're too close to the radio, you could feel your IQ just rocket through your cerebral cortex. I'm Dr. Ray.
Dr. Ray has more great advice coming up. Don't go anywhere. And that's a doctor's order.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. Over the last 50 years, we've had some of the greatest popes since the Reformation era. So why are things such a mess in American Catholicism? How do we analyze and confront the attacks we're facing? How do we identify wolves in sheep's clothing? How do we re-evangelize the baptized? Dr. Ralph Martin makes sense of a church in crisis and shows pathways forward. He'll make sense of a disordered world. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and you'll find it in our online bookstore.
I worked in pro baseball for a long time, and we play on Sundays. And it was an easy excuse. I took the easy out and just didn't go to Mass. Got caught up in that whole selfishness, that whole, I can do it all. The times when I was struggling were the times I needed God the most. And now that I've come back and accepted God, my world has completely changed.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
I'm okay, you're okay.
But your kid could be obnoxious.
You know, when I first wrote that down, there was a very popular book. Forget the author. He was a therapist type who wrote a book like that. I'm okay, you're okay. It's kind of one of these, we just accept everybody and we're tolerant of everything. And that doesn't happen anymore. We're not tolerant of things, at least from a certain perspective, that don't agree with the narrative. And that's what's frightening me very, 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 very much. Wilson's calling from Fort Clinton. Good place. I like Fort Clinton in Ohio. Wilson, before you ask me my thoughts, I'd like to ask you your thoughts as a therapist. You probably see a lot of different forms of anxiety. What do you think about what I just rambled on a few minutes ago?
Well, really what I think you were sort of tying into a lot of is that fear, flight, or freeze notion, you know, which is, you know, I would categorize that more in the trauma. But, you know, over the years, I've done a couple of presentations on anxiety, and I really want to tie in depression as well. I sort of describe anxiety and depression as siblings that sort of bicker and argue amongst each other. I think people really aren't aware of the fact that you can be so anxious that you become depressed.
Or that we're seeing that, aren't we? We're seeing that.
Yeah, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are a duo. I think, you know, they are a duo.
Yes, sir. Yeah, yeah.
Which explains, sure, in some respects, they asked a recent study there, not a study, survey, asked college kids, have you pondered suicide seriously? Do you know 1/4 of them in the survey said they seriously considered suicide? College kids. Kids in the zest and energy of life. You're right.
Absolutely. And I even see it younger. Most of my clinical work is working with children, and I see it's a real big concern for sure.
Do you see and I've talked about this in the past here, that some little kids just don't know how to interpret mask wearing?
Yeah. I mean, I could see that. You know, even as an adult, I don't like wearing a mask. I think it feels claustrophobic. And, you know, I think the thing that I've realized over this last year that I probably miss more than anything is seeing people smile. You know,
yes.
I can tell through, you know, the crinkles in people's eyes to sort of guess and see that they're smiling. But, you know, it's something that I miss, you know.
Very much. And I've had a lot of kids get real nervous about the mask. One teacher even told me that the little kids, a couple of them, had said if their mask drops off, are they going to die? Or is mommy and daddy going to get sick? Or is mommy and daddy going to die? Why do they have to wear a mask? I mean, little kids, some of them, especially the more skittish ones, they don't know how to interpret this. It's tough for them. But anyway, well, I just wanted your thoughts. Your question about hobbies, huh?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. I've never called in before to a show, but I was just leaving my local hardware store, and you know, I always like to go in there and just kind of ask questions and stuff. You know, I always find that the staff at like hardware stores are usually typically pretty friendly, and you know, you can always go in and ask them questions. And I'm a big, I guess you could say, hobby enthusiast. You know, I like the process. You know, I don't, it's always sort of a bittersweet when I finish a project. It's like, okay, let's move on to the next thing. And even for my own mental health, I feel as though hobbies fill a huge void for that. It's I was going to ask you, you know, what are your thoughts on hobbies?
Well, if we piggyback on what you said about depression, you know as well as I do that one of the indications of depression is a constriction of activities. The things that used to give people balanced joy, at least against the trials and tribulations of life, they discard. They get rid of them. And I think that's why you're seeing an awful lot of the depression that's exploded now, because we've so much constricted people. A hobby is some kind of activity that helps balance out. I know exactly what you're doing. I'm repainting our living room, all the casing and all the baseboards and the fireplace white. It was oak, and we're placing it white. Well, it's mindless. I can look at it and go, wow, I did that.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it does. And you're right. Exactly. I told my wife, I said, do you have anything for me to do after I'm done with this? it is a balance. I think a hobby is a balance. And a hobby says, I read some research on it once. They were comparing people who had hobbies with people who didn't. And the people who didn't, of course, were more emotionally distressed about life and about things. You don't know which first came first, the chicken or the egg. But in that, the correlation was the people with hobbies generally had a better mood.
I would agree.
Are you full-time therapist?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. You know, therapists don't, at least the ones that I know, including myself, you know, we typically don't work conventional 9-to-5 type hours, you know, with the caseloads and, you know, clients coming on and clients coming off and schedule changes and that sort of thing. It's exciting. I mean, I've been licensed for about 3 years now, and I'm actually going for a PhD in counseling education and supervision at the same time. So I'm sort of
you're a busy guy.
Yeah, you know, and I still try to find time for hobbies. You know, I think that's really kind of like my own mental health, where I can, you know, distract myself from you know, from some of my work, and just kind of like what you were saying about the painting, and put some effort into something and get to enjoy the outcomes of it. You know, it was funny. I'm at my office now. I have a client coming in at about 2:30, but on my wall I have just a little display of old instruments. I have a banjo and a fiddle and a mandolin, and I remember years ago when I thought I would pick up the mandolin, and you know, I would, you know, try to practice to strum it, and I was talking to my wife about it, and I said to her, you know, do you know why I'm learning to play the mandolin? And she said, no, why? And I said, I don't know either. It's not going to help me any. it was just for the sake of learning.
There's not a big demand, you know, in sleazy nightclubs for a guy that plays the mandolin. Although, I would refer you, Dean Martin has a song about a guy with a little mandolin. You might want to check it out. Google it, or no, don't Google it. DuckDuckGo it, and find out that he plays his mandolin. You know, and all the girls like him because he plays a mandolin. But he never has a girlfriend. He just helps everybody else have a girlfriend. Wilson, thank you for calling. I appreciate that so much. And God bless you. And good luck with that PhD and healing all those kids.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, if you guys have my phone number and you ever need to chat, feel free to reach out.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Wilson.
All right, no problem. Sir. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, that was great. I like talking to other therapists. I really do. The interaction they have with folks just gives me a lot of thoughts I can use. And I was trying to find stuff from Wilson there that I could steal. Okay, Sherry did email me. Now, see, this is a tricky question because it was the last week or the week before I had a caller. She was 70-ish. She said he was in good health. Her son lived on his own. He was 30. I think he had been diagnosed with autistic spectrum, but he was independent. And they had really not allowed him to come and see them because for the most part, they had retreated into their home. He, on the other hand, was out and about. And they were thinking, after all this time, you know, I'm starting to reconsider this. I want to see my son. And I said something to the effect, well, that's your decision. You know the risk you wish to take. Well, I just got an email that just tore me up one side and down the other. Said essentially, I was pretty bad because I was not thinking about other people. I was not thinking about protecting everybody. This is a social problem, etc. Now, this call from Sherry, and Sherry, I've talked too much, because now I'm going to have to hold you over because I don't want to interrupt you. I'm taking a break here in about 40 seconds. The call from Sherry is she has a daughter. Now, this is so common, by the way. It is typically us older folks who have, now I'm going to assume Sherry's daughter is an adult, who have young adult children, perhaps with children themselves, who are more squeamish, more nervous, more wanting to avoid contact than us older folk. And us older folk, as we get older and older and older, are higher on the risk scale. The young people under 35 are just virtually almost none on the risk scale. So they're the ones who are saying, no, you know. So when we get back, we'll talk to Sherry. And then your calls too, 877-573-7825. Thanks for joining me.
Catholic Church teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. St. John the Apostle records the John chapter 6 Bread of Life discourse, in which Jesus states that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. Who better to understand John's writings and subsequent teachings than a disciple and student of John, St. Ignatius of Antioch? In his letter to the Smyrnians in 110 AD, Ignatius writes, "I have no taste for corruptible food, nor for the pleasures of this life. I desire the bread of God, which is the flesh of Jesus Christ. And for drink, I desire his blood, which is love incorruptible." The Catholic Church absolutely follows St. John and St. Ignatius in taking Jesus at his word. Examining the truths of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
Not everyone who's attracted to the Lord and to a life of service is necessarily meant to be a priest. So there's all kinds of forms. I mean, from, let's say, the brotherhood, if you want to stay within a formal religious context, but then all kinds of ministries within a parish, all kinds of lay ministries that you can do. So not everyone's called to the priesthood. A priest is someone who is dedicated, devoted to ongoing study and ongoing prayer, to be a spiritual father. As Pope Benedict said, one of his wisest remarks, he said, people want many things from a priest, but what they want above all is someone who's a master of the spiritual life. Hey, I'm great at this ministry, and hey, I'm great at organizing this meeting, and hey, I'm good. Fine, but ultimately what the people want is you're a master of the spiritual life. You got to be, therefore, trained in prayer and theology and spirituality and so on.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Bossa Nova, I think.
That's what that is. Kind of like a Bossa Nova beat.
In case you weren't listening before the break. I mean, you could have been tuned in, but still not listening.
I was going to take a call from Sherry, whose daughter thinks that they are crazy if they go out and visit family. She says my daughter is very, very paranoid that we are spreading the virus around. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Dr. Ray.
Is this an adult daughter?
Yes, she is an adult daughter. And I think the complicating factor for us is that she, well, first of all, my husband and I have both had COVID in October. And we had pretty mild cases and recovered perfectly fine. But my daughter works in a hospital setting where she works with families, pregnant women and newborns, and has seen some very sad, very tragic cases. And so she's very conscientious. Her employer tells them, you know, not to see anybody anywhere outside their immediate household. She takes her clothes off as soon as she gets into the garage, you know, changes her robe, washes her clothes before she, you know, all of that. And so when she found out that we went to visit my husband's family out of state with our two college-age kids, she was very distraught and said that that's reckless, and it's people like that that aren't following the rules that make it tough on people like them, the healthcare workers that, you know, are at high risk every single day. And I just felt terrible. I just don't know how to talk to her about it.
You can't. You can't.
Okay.
If you attempt to say to her, we'll take precautions, we'll be careful, we have antibodies now, at least for the next several months, so we're okay, and it's been a year now that we have been constricted. We're weighing everything. It doesn't matter. It won't. Will it matter? Will she go, oh, okay, Mom, thanks for explaining it that way?
No. Probably not.
My daughter is a nurse, works in an emergency room. sees her share of COVID. She has not in any way said to us, this is how you have to live, Mom and Dad, because I see this and that. What's the best thing to say here? I'm not... Somebody's going to say, Sherry is not doing her part to protect people. That's what your daughter's
That's
saying.
That's right.
And your daughter is saying, Mom, you're a semi-murderer. She won't use those words, but...
But people like us are.
Yeah.
Even if it's not exactly us.
Yeah. And so, you know, the question really becomes, and this is a fair question, what do you do in terms of weighing the risks and the balance? I had COVID in October, so did my wife. It goes through families really quick. That is the main place it incubates. It goes into families. One person gets it in the family, and the chances of somebody else getting it just goes through the roof. That happens constantly. My brother, his wife, and both of their boys had it all in 1 3-week period. Boom, 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 boom. All tested positive. So given all that, will your daughter write you off? Will she say, if you don't completely restrict yourself to seeing no one other than each other, will she look at you and say, Mom, I'll never see you the same way again?
I don't think so, but it's still going to be painful, I think. Maybe she won't ever see us the same. I don't know. I haven't asked her that because it's hard to talk to her.
I know. This is one of the unintended effects of all that we've done. We've turned people against each other in massive numbers. I'm a shrink. I have never seen this level of hostility. People turning on family members, politically, morally, they always did. But now also throw in the COVID virus. If you don't do exactly as I think you should do, then it isn't a matter of, okay, let's look at this and balance out the risks and balance out how we're going to respond. It's a matter of you're evil. You're just evil. And that's it. Sherry, I don't know what to tell you. Maybe if you decide to do certain things that your daughter would disapprove of,
We just don't tell her.
Well, that's what I would have suspected. That's exactly what I would have suspected. You know, I have an aunt and uncle. They want me to go visit them so desperately. They truly do. And they're older, and they love when we come and visit, and they want us to come and visit. My aunt says, look, I am not going to live like this. It's not going to happen. You come here anytime you want. Well, one of their daughters is totally against that.
Mm-hmm.
So who do I listen to? Do I listen to the 60-some-year-old daughter or my aunt who says, please come and see us?
Even though you've had COVID, your cousin doesn't think.
It's irrational.
Yeah.
All of the science says, if you've had it, you got some antibodies, and for the most part, you're immune to it for quite a while, or at least some months.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, they've had the opportunity for the vaccine. I don't know if they're going to get it or not. They may not. They just say, I don't want it. Okay, all right.
Mm-hmm.
But you're seeing, Sherry, let's take your case and multiply that by a whole bunch. And the irony is, okay, your daughter's a healthcare professional. The irony is, even if she weren't, the under 35-year-old age group is by far the most risk-averse. That's what the surveys show. They're the ones who are most nervous, fearful about this virus.
Hmm.
Which, under age 55 or 60, the chances of contracting it and dying from it are one in tens of thousands. All right.
I think in her case, too, that because she sees the saddest cases
mm-hmm.
at the hospital, that her perspective is skewed.
Well, she sees those who have contracted it and have serious complications,
right.
Which in some respects, now again, I want people not to mishear me. I'm not trivializing it. But in some respects, if you focus on any disease and that becomes what you look at, diabetic comas, pneumonia, viral pneumonia, or bacterial pneumonia. If you start focusing on one disease, you can really come up with some real tragic stuff. Okay? So, again, it is tragic, but the question becomes, how shall we live? Thanks, Sherry.
Call to Communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders. This afternoon, 2 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Recently, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit issued a unanimous ruling upholding the First Amendment in a case that the American Freedom Law Center has been litigating for more than 10 years. In May 2010, we filed a civil rights lawsuit challenging the refusal of a Detroit Area Transportation Authority to display a religious freedom ad on its buses. The ad offered support for those who wanted to convert from Islam. Our client's religious freedom ad was rejected, even though the government transit authority had no problem accepting and running an anti-religion ad sponsored by an atheist organization. That approved ad, which itself sparked controversy with bus drivers and passengers, stated, "Don't believe in God? You are not alone." Despite accepting the atheist ad, our client's ad was rejected because government transit officials said it was scornful toward Islam and because it was political and thus violated the transit authority's advertising guidelines. The Sixth Circuit unanimously struck down both guidelines, holding that the scornful restriction was viewpoint-based and that the amorphous ban on political ads could not be objectively applied, all in violation of the First Amendment. While justice finally prevailed, it certainly wasn't swift. Indeed, this case shows that persistence pays off. I'm Robert Buse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
Yeah, I don't want to paint a pretty picture. Okay, see, I had to find a word to segue because I wanted to go from that call, which is so prototypical of what's going on out there for many families, to paint. Do you ever paint dark oak white? Off-white. It's Dover white. My wife would know the difference between oak Dover white and eggshell white and linen white and off-white. I just go, it's white. Well, first of all, you got to... got to tape off everything because you get it all over the place and then you have to repaint the walls. Secondly, you got to put a heavy primer on it because it's not going to stick. Third, it takes three coats. So I'm telling you, if you don't like painting, don't do it. Whew. Okay. We have an anonymous call from Illinois. There's some COVID calls up there, too, that always spurs traffic. It sounds pretty rough here, Anonymous. It really does. Sounds like the situation's kind of out of control. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Last weekend was a real tough weekend. My daughter came home one night an hour and 15 minutes after curfew. Last weekend, she refused to do chores. She dropped the F-bomb on me. Kept saying, "I don't care, I don't care, I don't care." And now things have settled down a bit, but I'm just wanting to know how to proceed. How do we prevent this from happening in the future? The concern we have is if we're too restrictive, that may cause her to perhaps go overboard with risky behaviors. And also, she refuses to go to church.
How old is she?
17.
Oh. When will she be 18?
Next fall.
Oh, okay. So, you have cited the... I wrote a book called Raising Upright Kids in an Upside-Down World. In the first three chapters, I talked about why parents are afraid to set limits, to be strong, to many respects be countercultural. And one of the fears is yours, which is, well, you know, if we do this, if we're too far out of the cultural mainstream, she's just going to get sneaky. She's going to get rebellious. She's going to hate us. She's going to get resentful. It's going to get really, really, really ugly. So we have to walk a line between giving her freedom and trying to put some limits on her. Example, I'm assuming she has a smartphone, correct?
Yes.
Of course. 99.999% of 17-year-olds have a smartphone. However, let's say that you would decide, given her rebelliousness, her cussing you out, the fact that she is refusing to do anything you ask of her legitimately, and you take the phone, what would she do?
Good question. She actually won't hand the phone over. And if we, I guess, cut off service, she can still get Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. She can get that at school or wherever.
Would you be afraid to do something like that?
I wouldn't, but my husband thinks we shouldn't.
Okay. So now you have a marriage disagreement.
Right.
Okay. Well, if you came to me as a client... We sat down and we talked. I would want to find out exactly how defiant your daughter is and how long the defiance has been building. If this is something that started 2 months ago or no. It's been gaining momentum for the last 6 years. Tell me, at this point, if you're going to set any kind of limits, you're probably going to face significant rebellion. Would that be safe to say?
Right.
Okay. So she's forcing you into a choice. The choice, it's a gross choice, which means it's a broad choice, which is, if I attempt to say, you know, even though you're 17, you're simply not cooperating. You're just not cooperating. You're staying out past curfew. And just as a side prediction here, Mom, my guess would be that that's going to become a pattern, and it's going to get later and later and later, and much of the time there's a night that they won't come home at all. But that's just a thought. Maybe not happen. However, if you do set limits, you're going to have a storm. You're going to have a nuclear storm. If you don't, if you say, well, okay, we just got to persevere with her for another 10 months until she's 18 and then she can't live here anymore, which I don't think your husband would do anyway. So from what you're describing, I was going to say one of your options, and I'm not recommending it, but it's an option, is to press unruly charges through the court. She would be placed on probation, and she would have a probation officer, and she would be told you have to cooperate with your parents, and these are the things you need to do. But I suspect your husband would be totally against that.
Yes.
Okay. See, the more we talk, the more it becomes clear you guys are very different.
Right.
Boy, oh boy. Here's a thought. You consider it. You do what you want. If he's going to disagree with you, if he's going to go so far as to undercut you, you are basically rendered neutral. maybe you ought to just tell him, well, you won't support me, so you take over all disciplining. What if you did that? Let him see what could happen when he just decides, okay, well, we can't do this, we can't do that, we can't do this, we can't do that, because she'll hate us. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then, you know, would you want to do that? I mean, you know, think about this, Mom. You don't have any leverage. Don't you? Right. Don't, right? You don't have any leverage. So for you to say, I want my daughter to cooperate, but I'm not allowed to do anything. Well, if that's the case, you might as well just say, well, okay, Dad, take over. That's your decision, but I wouldn't rule it out as an option for you, Mom. I really wouldn't. And typically in these situations, go ahead.
What we could do is sit down when everyone is calm and just say, would this be an option? If you are not here when you need to be home, curfew, this is what will happen. Do we list what the consequences are in advance?
Well, yeah, you do. But the problem is, so what?
Mm-hmm.
If your husband's not going to do it, and if your daughter is not going to adhere to it, what then can you do?
Yeah, I don't know.
Right. So that's what you always got to think about. That's why parents will say, well, we'll sit down and we'll draw up a contract. I said, well, the contracts are nice, but if you don't have any leverage to enforce the contract, they're not worth the paper they're written on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you have to decide. If you sit down with your husband, say, okay, what will you agree to do? And then if you'll agree to do this, can we sit down with her and say, okay, this is what we want to do the next time you come home late. This is what we want to do because you're not going to church. This is what we want to do because whatever it is that you cussed us out dropping some pretty heavy language. Thank you, my dear. Okay. Good luck to you. God bless you. I'll talk to you. This is Dr. Ray. I'll be right back.
Call now for great advice from Dr. Ray. Now, don't you feel better?
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
How did the apostles learn to pray? By observing their leader, the master of prayer, Jesus Christ. The Catholic Catechism reminds us that Jesus often drew apart, frequently at night on a mountaintop, to pray in solitude. He includes everyone in his prayer, for he has taken on humanity in his incarnation, and he offers us all to the Father when he offers himself. By his human prayer, the Word, who has become flesh, shares in all that his brethren experience. He sympathizes with our weakness in order to free us. Thanksgiving precedes Jesus' prayer as in raising of Lazarus from the dead. Before the miracle, Jesus prays, Father, I thank you for having heard me, which implies that the Father always hears his petitions. Jesus also reveals how to ask. Say thank you before the gift is given. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
The EWTN home video highlight for January is A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing 2, The Gender Agenda.
For two centuries, the ideologues of socialism or communism have used deceptive word jugglery to rebrand themselves as liberals or progressives.
Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
Well, I have some couple of people who disagree with me vehemently. Joe from Oregon has been waiting patiently for quite a while. He says, I agree, but I disagree. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, what's the disagreement centering around?
Well, I said mostly that I agree with you mostly on your opening monologue. And I used to listen to your show a lot, but, you know, and I had a small uptick in my IQ, I noticed, but I was able to finish your jokes before, you know, you got finished with them. So I wasn't sure if, you know, keep listening to you, you know, how much more knowledge I could gain. But after a while, you know, I miss you and I turn the radio back on. And, you know, my IQ is definitely going up again. So thank you.
Well, you had slippage. I mean, come on, Joe. You know there was slippage and people were probably noticing it.
I don't know if that's a phobia or not that you could identify as, but.
That's what you want to disagree. It's like get new material. Is that it?
Yeah, at least in your joke.
Hey, every once in a while I come up with one you haven't heard.
I'll pray for your wife, you know. Yeah. So, anyway, yeah, I was just kind of, you know, over the last year or something, or even, you know, even longer than that, what's going on in America. And we see America as being a woman and democracy. Our Constitution kind of has having that woman, you know, aspect to it. And we know from Genesis who is going to be at battle is the devil and the woman. And the men are going to be at bat or blame the woman, you know, for the original sin, you know, when they first.
They better not. They better not. If they know it's good for them, they better not.
Right. But I can kind of see how, you know, listening to both sides of our divided parties right now in politics, that the woman's under attack, you know, or the men kind of seeing the parties, the Democrat Party as a man and the Republican Party as being a man just because they're generative, right? Like they make the laws and stuff like that. And they're an original constitution in America as being the woman, right? And the lawmakers are supposed to be generative. And we see often that they're blaming the woman, right? The Constitution, they're kind of pointing fingers at that affair or those kind of things. I see that often amongst both parties, you know. And I think there's a lot of agreement from both parties, but I think we're just at odds at each other and blaming the part,
yeah,
you know, the other part.
It's frightening. It is frightening. And unfortunately, I just heard today that 71,000 people were kicked off of Twitter. So on one hand, if one says that everybody has their point to make and we can discuss this reasonably, one of the things I'm seeing, just as an objective observer, as best I can be, is that certain traditional, what you would call traditional conservative voices or even questioning voices, what appears to be a massive movement to shut them off, shut them down, shut them up. Some of the things that I look at and follow, they're gone. They're just gone, taken away, taken down. Whatever you might think of the president, for major tech companies to say, we're not going to allow the president to speak. I mean, that should scare anybody. Whether you're liberal, progressive, anything, that should just scare the snot out of you. That certain ideas or notions are so vile, as defined as vile. On the other hand, you can have all kinds of pornography. You can have all kinds of vicious, vicious type of aggression if it's in a certain direction. So thank you, Joe. I appreciate that. I have a pharmacist, only about a minute left, and she quite disagrees with me. Noella, please, I want to give you some time. I only got about a minute, but please share with me. I'll just quietly listen.
Okay. Thank you for listening. I appreciate that you like to listen to opinions that are different than yours. I am a clinical pharmacist with a residency, which means I'm highly educated in this area. My husband is a physician, so he's highly educated. I do not give advice about psychology, behavior problems, religion, except talk to a psychologist, talk to a priest, because I know I don't know what I'm talking about. You do not know what you're talking about as far as COVID. The CDC, Dr. Fauci, those kind of people know what they're talking about. You don't. People can carry the virus in their nose after they've had it and can spread it. This is why people are upset. So you don't know what you're talking about.
Do me this favor. I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off. Please call back. I would love to hear more of what you have to say. Please call back.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.